One of the things he always wants to say to parents when he delivers the baby, you know, and hands it, is congratulations. Now you have to worry about this for the rest of your life. Scotch. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 255 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm a simulation living inside a simulation.
I'm Sam, and I'm a little warm right now. I'm going to be honest. It's a little hot in here.
A little hot?
Are you going to survive? Window, buddy. Are you going to survive the 1 hour of podcasting?
Luckily, I'm wearing athletic clothing, which is what happens when you work from home for a long time.
It's going to wick. It's going to wick the moisture.
Wick it. I haven't even showered yet, and it's like 4 p.m.
It's been 30 days. It's been quiet. Have you showered?
I mean, today. Today I haven't showered.
Oh, okay. Yes, gotcha. I got to be honest. The first time I heard the term moisture wicking technology, I imagined some scenario where, like, I'm sweating and the sweat just kind of like, just like, it flies right off of my body.
Quick sounds like an onomatopoeia, right? It sounds like the noise the moisture would make as it flies away from your body.
Yeah, because that's not a verb that I've ever heard outside of the context of marketing athletic wear.
Or candles.
Right. That's the more of the noun on the noun side of things.
Or John, you know, John.
John Wick. Yeah.
I guess wicking is
wicking just absorbing something like a sponge and then drying off? Is that what wicking is?
Yeah, I think it's either that or it's killing a man with a book. So you got to be careful of context,
Context is king.
Or just throwing lots of knives. That's the possibility.
Also, this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is April 19th, 20 Blundy. And before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be profanity and weird pronunciations of the word blend. Okay.
Yeah. This is
a retroactive warning about what's already happened. We'd also like to thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. We got a new donation from Silent Reaver, who says, I started listening in July 2019, and I finally caught up at episode 250. I run a 3-person indie studio in the UK. Congratulations on the expansion. And listening to your journey has been inspirational. Excited to be an up-to-date member of the community. Go get some fancy coffee and see you in Discord.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And congratulations on growing that studio and just, hanging in there.
I think they might need to change their name to Audible Reaver, though, because we've heard from them now.
They're not lurking anymore. Mm-hmm. We'd also like to thank our recurring supporters. Thank you very much. All right, let's talk about life.
I enjoyed that. Would like to thank you. Thank you. It's very simple.
Yeah.
I would like to announce what was going to happen because there was so much coming that we needed some time to.
Especially, in these long stretches of being trapped in the house, sometimes adding a little theatrical flair to the thing you're about to do before you do it, it's just what you need. You'd be like, I'm about to do the dishes. And then you just do them silently.
It's kind of like starting a question by saying, question. And then you ask it. Because you need to, you got to prepare the audience to be ready.
Yeah, you don't want to surprise people, You got to let them know it's coming.
Yeah, they won't be surprised when you yell question at them.
But they will be if you say question and then you just leave because.
That would be surprising. Or confusing, I guess, more so.
Now, Sam. You've got some kind of
story. I got a sheet situation.
Sam's got a sheet.
Okay. So here's the deal. I typically slide my way into bed sideways, okay?
Before going to bed. Slide in sideways.
So isn't that the normal way?
As opposed to from above.
You guys don't have one of those, like a Mission Impossible apparatus to get you to, from above.
You got to climb up on your roof first, and you take your sleep pony down.
So the way Sam does it is from the side.
Weirdly, I guess.
I pull the sheets. It's very odd. I pull the sheets back, and then I get
and then you
there.
Get in there. Yeah.
Kind of like weird. But you have to do this thing where you go from like standing to seated. So it's like going inside.
No, it's really complicated.
The problem is
there's a lot.
On a bed such as mine, there are two entire sheet mechanisms on top of the bed. Okay. Not, I'm not talking about the one
sheet. Like, by mechanism, do you just mean a sheet, or is there?
I just mean a sheet, but this is where it gets confusing. Okay, because you got your top, whatever that's called, right? The comforter thing, right?
You got your cover. Yeah. Your comforter.
You got your thick sheet.
Your thick sheet, right? And then underneath that, you usually have a skinny sheet.
A napkin.
Yeah, your thick
sheet. Right. Napkin.
Okay. It's your big napkin.
Now here's the deal. So the big napkin in my bed is the same material as the one that you lay on. In the bed, right? So like,
they kind of always come as a set, right?
Right. And it's the same material as the placemat.
Right. Yeah. The one you're laying on, you're talking about the glove one that just kind of wraps.
Exactly. It's wraps the mattress, right?
Yeah. It's the bed hugger.
Yeah. So I got that. So you're laying on the bed hugger and then you got this big napkin. And then on top of that is
your thick sheet.
Your thick
sheet. That's your goose bag because it's full of. Down.
Full of goose
parts. Geese. Okay. So, so usually I slide in sideways and like 9 times out of 10, I'm able to appropriately, be above the bed hugger, but below the big napkin and also below the goose bag. Okay.
Yeah.
So usually I'm able to just get
a normal place in the bed. Yeah.
The normal place. Okay, right. So now the issue is that sometimes. I gotta move this. I got this dog, I got yogurt in there. So I got yogurt in this mix, right? Which is just, that's a bad place
is
for
he,
you.
Is dogs, he on the very top of all of this? So he's in the dog problem. Sheet?
Sometimes
does the dog sheet go on top of the thick sheet or somewhere in between?
The dog sheet is supposed to go on top of the thick sheet, but sometimes the dog sheet
is the goose bag.
In the goose bag or, somewhere else. And so there's this problem. And so basically what happened was I slide into bed sideways, right? I wicked into bed, if you will. Then, I put this pillow. I move this pillow below my knees because I talk about not having back pain, right? So pillow's below the knees, so I can support my
pillow.
Back.
Was the dog?
No, so I got that once. The dog was awake. Got that one. Taken care.
So it was pillow an actual below dog. The knees.
So now I'm laying there, and my wife kicks her foot over, and she's like, "How come you're on top of the bed napkin?" Right,
the big napkin,
and I'm like, I'm not on top of the big napkin. Which the problem is that this has happened enough times that she just assumed that I would be on top of the big napkin at this point. Okay,
right, and then she's under the big napkin, and if you're on top of it, then
exactly how are you supposed to touch your freakishly cold leg to mine? Right, that's the reward she was trying to go for. So I move my leg around, thinking that she's correct, right. I must be on top of this big napkin because that's usually what I do. And turns out, no, she had, when she flung her leg over, shoved it into the pillowcase. Her foot was inside the pillow that was below.
I was like, which pillowcase?
But my knees.
The knee pillow.
The knee pillow. So her foot was between the knee pillow and the, whatever the casing is around a pillow. Uh-huh.
So she's now wearing pillow pants.
She's got pillow pants on and thinks that I am below a big napkin. And I'm like, no.
Absolutely not.
How could you're
in a pillow.
You are in a pillow. So anyways, this happened and Diane and I both just fucking lost it. This was like 10:30. I think it was on Friday. But she just shoved her leg in this pillowcase and then was like, "Why are you not under the sheets?" And I was like, "Your leg's in a pillowcase. Stop it.
Get your shit together."
Anyways, that was my story. Pretty simple.
The simple things, even better, had she just been wearing socks or something.
That would be hilarious.
I feel like this is very telling of sort of every time we go to prepare the podcast, we talk about some stuff that's happened in our lives, And like, we haven't gone anywhere or done anything in a month.
Yeah.
We've just been in the house. So now the most interesting thing that's going to happen over the course of a week is somebody putting their leg in a pillow. It's like, we got to get this onto the podcast.
You got to speak your truth, You got to tell the world. Tell your story.
I'm glad that you guys worked your way through that.
Yeah, that was important,
Marriage has a lot of ups and downs, and this is just one of those things that you just got to put
together. Just makes you stronger,
Makes you stronger as a team. Let's talk about the studio. Let's talk about
– What about it, Seth?
Let's talk about Levelhead.
Oh, right.
Levelhead's coming out right now.
what a week. Ab, don't get too excited.
But I mean,
relatively speaking. Yeah, relative to the scale of the universe.
Given that time means nothing.
It's when just you're right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 11 days from the podcast air date from this episode. So that's pretty wild.
It's startling.
It's been 2 years and I 4 months. I thought
it was 8 days. Wait, isn't it on – aren't we launching on a Thursday?
Oh, sorry, yeah. It's 11 days from now. 8 days.
Yeah.
8 days from the podcast, yeah. It's very soon.
The 30th of April.
30th of April. It's still going quite smoothly. We've found a couple of speed bumps, as you do. My favorite one so far is that it turns out that we are essentially doubling our web traffic on accident in some fairly common scenarios, which means all of Adam's simulations and careful planning of making sure the servers are going to be fine for like 10,000 players or more. Turns out he should have been preparing for 20,000 because
fortunately, I was using our actual real player data as benchmarks. And so my simulation includes all of the
– That's true actually, yeah.
Yeah, but I discovered this – I've just been working basically like every evening because I'm trying to get all this stuff squared away so the servers stay alive. And so it was like, I don't know, 10 or something. And I was looking at some server logs and I was like, this is really weird. It looks like every request is just happening twice, but like back to back by a couple of milliseconds. So as in they're like just being sent instantaneously at the same time. And but I was like, I was sure that there must just that couldn't be right because I couldn't think of a reason why that would happen. And so I was like checking things out, like trying all this stuff, and I was like, I'm pretty sure this is doing it. And I asked Seth if he could think of a reason for that, and then I don't know, it was like 20 minutes later, he was like, oh, I found it.
Yeah, so, found it.
Sure enough.
And it's been like that the whole time, like since we launched Early Access. But this is one of those things that genuinely doesn't matter at a very small scale and will matter a lot at a much larger
literally
scale.
Literally double – wait, because that was the thing I spent basically almost an entire week trying to optimize was level searches because they're really costly because they have to – you can use all these different search terms, and so being able to find one or a handful of levels among the future tens of thousands or millions, you know, it's really important that it goes fast, and it requires a lot of sort of careful work to make sure that it does. So I'd be like spending all this time optimizing these things, and then it turns out that we were just also asking for twice as many as we actually needed.
So we're not doing that anymore, but this is also part of that challenge of having so many different platforms is and also especially during the stuff that's all going on in the world right now is some platforms basically just let you make changes to the game and you've just done it now. Mm-hmm. So if you're on Steam, you just like publish and the patch is out in seconds. But then you've got like the consoles in particular, they've got their certification process where people actually have a heavy touch and they test your game and make sure it's not crashing the device or there was some game, this actually did apparently get through Xbox Cert a while back that brought down all of Xbox Live because it was spamming the Xbox server at 60 frames per second with some kind of API request. So they want to make sure that your game is working well in their ecosystem, which means that it goes through a screening process. And as companies have shifted to working from home and basically having to update their entire development pipelines because of the pandemic, then things are just taking longer. So we now have a range of – on some platforms, we can get a patch out instantly. On other platforms, it might be 3 weeks. You know? So
– very exciting times. I'm glad that all the problems we've come across so far have been able to be solved for the most part external to the build that was currently –
yeah, because even with this one, we can solve it just by having more server resources, you know, which is not – necessarily a cheap thing to do.
It's us just throwing money at the problem.
It's just throwing money at the problem.
Hope that works.
Yeah, those are problems. If you're doing okay financially as a company and you run into a problem that is literally if you just throw some money at it, it goes away. That is the best kind of problem to run into because then you can fix it later once you get past that window, bridge that gap.
So that's kind of the only thing that we've come across that I would consider to be like a semi-large problem, but as Adam said, you know, we can deal with it. And since we can patch it on most platforms pretty easily, then it minimizes the
risk. It'll only be a remaining problem on I think probably one platform at this point, it sounds like, but two anyway. It won't be too bad.
So as far as other sort of like interesting launch considerations, this is just kind of a fun lesson. I don't know. Just an interesting
thought. Just a fun note, really.
Which is when you're planning an event like this, like a big game launch, we have an internal saying, which is there's no such thing as a good launch. And all that really means is no matter how much planning you do and no matter how many dominoes you set up, some aspect of it is not going to go as planned, right?
Yeah, and even if you're just launching on one platform, like it doesn't matter the sprawl of platform coverage you have. Just as soon as you're launching your game, this is what happens.
Yeah, because launching your game on a platform, just any platform, requires hundreds and hundreds of checklist items of things that you need to do or that other people need to do or whatever. And they all have to happen about the same time, right? So, of course, if you're doing that on six or seven platforms, now there's just six or seven times as many things that could go wrong. But one of the other things that can happen is some external event that you had absolutely no way of knowing was coming. And so one of the things for us is always looking at different time slots for launch and figure out like when would be the right time to launch the game, because we want to launch in a void when there's nothing else happening, when there's not any huge games launching, where the press is basically bored and receptive to the thing that we're putting out so that they have something to write about, right?
Now, the difficulty is that everybody – tends to try to, for the most part, in the indie sphere, you try to keep your launch date within like 8-ish weeks max of the actual date that it comes out.
Yeah, AAA often does it like 6 months in advance or more even. Mm-hmm. But the indie space, you got to try to get as close as you can get away with, which mostly means like you shouldn't get any closer than 6 weeks because then you're too close. But so you kind of
see 8 to 12 week weeks. But the problem is, of course, that means that everybody's going to announce basically everyone who is also participating in the same sort of sphere is going to be announcing that their game's coming out in the same time. So you can't really make a good decision because you don't.
Yeah, you've got a prisoner's dilemma here, right?
Yeah. And your launch date is also typically locked in, a few weeks before you make your announcement, which means by the time you actually make your announcement, if somebody else has already announced something, it's too late. Yeah. Or if somebody else is going to announce something, it's too late for them because they probably can't move that date.
Yeah. And then you have things like what just happened this past week, which is Streets of Rage 4 is the follow-up to, of course, Streets of Rage 3, which I think was in the 90s. I think it's been like 20 to 25 years or something since the most recent Streets of Rage game came out. It was a very popular beat-em-up style game from that sort of like arcade 90s era. Basically, you're just like walking to the side and punching lots of people. I guess a spiritual precursor to the hack and slash genre in a way.
It's like a walk and punch.
Yeah, it's like a Street Fighter meets hack and slash.
Stroll and punch. Yeah, like
that. Yeah, you just kind of casually stroll along and punch the crap out of things. And so because this is a follow-up to a long-standing franchise, and because it's been so long since the most recent one, it's a bit of a big deal. There's been a lot of press about it and a lot of news and stuff. And they just announced it like 2 days ago, and their launch date is April 30th.
Yep.
And this is the same thing as like when we were going to launch Level. We were originally like, we should look at launching Levelhead in June of 2019. And then like 2 months before that, Nintendo announced Mario Maker launching at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of goes to show like, you can't know. And
you just do your best.
At a certain point, you just do your best and hope that all of the things that you've set up are enough to still sort of like pry the attention away from the new thing that's going on. But on the other hand,
there are also things that it's easy to focus on the stuff that gets in the way, right? But there are also things that end up in your favor. Because while this game is now coming out on the 30th, I'm pretty sure there was another big title that is no longer come out on the 30th.
Minecraft Dungeons. coming out. Yeah.
And a bunch of titles that were coming out, not on the same day, but, you know, in very close proximity, that have now been punted by weeks or even months. Right. So the launch window is clearer than it was. There is just this one new thing that kind of popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So essentially, I guess the lesson is random things happen.
Yeah.
And you just good and bad.
You just got to be kind of chill about it.
Yeah. You control the things that you control and try to set things up. You know, the real lesson is like try to set things up such that no matter what happens, even in a bad case scenario, you've set yourself up to be able to account from that and recover from that. So we're not really worried about anything, but it's just kind of an interesting note, you know.
I guess in related news, I looked at my Switch today in the featured section, and Level Head was three rows down or four rows down.
Ooh.
In the featured section.
Hey. Yeah. We have actual featuring support. And that's true of the Switch, and it's also going to be true of many of our launch platforms. So we've lined things up quite well. And before we go on, so we don't have any industry news because, you know, industry is pretty quiet right now. But I do want to talk before we go to questions, I want to talk about this speedrun Level Head delivery championship that's been going on because it's cool as fuck. So who wants to explain what this is and what we're doing to support it?
Yes. So the speedrun competition, it's at twitch.tv/deliverychampionship, which I think is fantastic as far as claiming a channel for it. Basically what it is a few members of the community have put together a system and then also are basically shoutcasting the match to like basically, you know, call the match live where they are putting two players against one another on the same series of levels. And then the two players actually compete to see who can play through the whole playlist faster. And so it's a 10-string playlist. And so it's a pretty intense situation. It's like, you know, usually like 25, 30 minutes of play. And it's very fun to watch, and the announcers have been great as well. And so it's a really cool thing. It's something that we just sort of did a shout out through the Discord and then through our Twitter with yesterday and today. But otherwise, really wanted to just see kind of what happened with it. And so Adam was watching. I think all of us popped in to watch, but Adam got a little irritated.
Yeah, I was watching. I was watching the poor. People running this thing, which was talk gibberish, or I guess talk gibberish, as they kept on saying. So I don't know if
gibberish.
I don't know if that's the preferred pronunciation. So talk gibberish, and I think Pure Nix.
Yeah,
maybe.
I know Edefeed is also putting it together too. So
yeah, Edefeed was in a bunch of the runs, and so yeah, I'm not exactly sure who's organizing it, but the two guys who were actually like announcing it, and so I was watching. I think it was talk gibberish trying to assemble the lists of levels for people to play so that the two competitors could basically get the same set of levels and then, you know, play them against each other. And the way that they clearly did a whole bunch of work ahead of time to figure out how to do this, because there is no way to do this in an easy way in the game. And by this, I mean have you and one other person on purpose play the same sequence of levels, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they did some weird convoluted thing where they made a new player account, and they had that player account add some set of stuff to some list so that then everybody could go look at that player's list and then turn that into a playlist and play from there. Which mostly worked. But very convoluted and very inconvenient. And so I was watching them do this, and it caused them to delay everything by like 5 or 10 minutes while they were trying to like wrangle these, you know, level lists. And having a level playlist is one of the things that like we really wanted to do and didn't have time for it. And then also, even though we didn't have time for it and couldn't have done it, it also just kind of had fallen down further on the sort of like things that seem important sort of list. But then as soon as I saw everybody struggling with this, I was like, not having this feature actually removes this really interesting – it removes this one thing that's really important, which is a shared experience, right? Two people can – it's really hard for two people to have the exact same experience in the game because of there are no playlists. So, right. So I was watching that and I was like, oh, this sucks. Like, this is revealing kind of a hole, you know? But then I thought, I can make a playlist in the browser.
Adam's right? Like, wait a sec. I remember who I am.
Right. Because we didn't do it because we couldn't figure out how to deal with all the UI challenges in game, you know? Yeah. And then there are all these questions like, oh, no, once we have a playlist, like, how do you find it? Do you search for playlists? You know what happens? And I was like, I could do an MVP of this just on the browser.
Yeah.
And that's it. Where then it can, we can leverage the bookmarking system so that you, so that a person can now go make a playlist and just have a list of playlists that they've manually curated. And if someone wants to play those levels, they can just go hit a button to add them to the top of their bookmark list. And so now when you go back to your game and check your bookmarks, there's that list of levels in the exact order that you intended and so on. Yeah. So I just did that today because I was so annoyed watching it.
Because it's Sunday.
I mean, I've been working all weekend and every evening. And,
and you needed a break, so.
I needed something to do that felt like it was doing something actually cool that players knew they were benefiting from, as opposed
to just stopping things from catching on fire.
My job normally is the type that if you don't think I'm doing anything, then that's when I'm doing my job correctly, right? Mm-hmm. And so every once in a while, it's nice to be able to be like, oh, here's an actual thing that you can go use. So I guess I'm going to deploy that right after the podcast and let people try it out. Just as an MVP. So you can't even edit your list. It's just dead simple. But it reminded me that there's a whole bunch of stuff that we can add sort of peripherally because of the fact that this is a web-enabled game. We have this simple or this common API that the game uses and the website uses. It's all the same thing. And so there's probably a whole bunch of little stuff like this that if we just think about it in a, you know, weird enough and sort of MVP enough way, as in minimum viable product, not most viable player. Right. So we think about it in the minimum way, then there's probably a way we can kind of get at that thing without having to update the game on 7 platforms after, you know, a week of development or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and it's also something we were talking about is this question of, you know, what are we going to do post-launch? Like what kinds of features are we going to add to the game, you know, in the future after we get it out? And this just kind of demonstrates why it's so hard to answer that question because, you know, Levelhead's been out in early access for a year now. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this idea of having customizable playlists that people can do, but there never seemed to be a compelling enough drive for that feature to
exist. Yeah, it's kind of hard to see the use case, right? You can see use cases, but –
but it's hard to tell what the value of it is, right?
Yeah.
And then you see these events and you're like, oh my God, if we did this, it would enable this kind of thing and then some other stuff too to be very easy and accessible for everyone. And then all of a sudden, the value becomes a lot higher.
Yeah.
And
– well, it's one of those things too. It's because we didn't have that capability at all. It was therefore so convoluted and laborious and error-prone to do something like it where you could just have two people play the same sets of levels. That nobody would do it, right? So you couldn't actually, except in this case where they just like they made it work, right? And so it's one of those kind of hidden. It's a hidden cost of a missing feature, right? Which we've dealt with and talked about in the past too, with all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, you can't improve what you can't see, right?
Yeah, you can't improve what you can't see, and the players also are mostly giving us feedback on stuff they already see, you know, and so even this is a feature. It's something that players have like kind of talked about here and there, but nobody's been super passionate about it. And even the players that put this competition together, even despite struggling through and putting making all that work, they didn't actually like go into the chat and say, oh, it'd be really great if we had a playlist feature to get around this, right?
Which I appreciate, frankly, because we're a week
ahead of
launch.
They were using the tools that
yeah, were, it's just kind of, it just makes it interesting as a design hole. But I think what's one of those fun things though is we got our system is set up in such a way that we have multiple ways of solving design problems that we see in design holes. Mm-hmm. And the idea that I could take, you know, 4 hours on a Sunday and put together a solution to this that is just already available and doesn't have to be, you know, go through the laborious pipeline of getting it into the game.
I think this is also the nice thing.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, we've talked about the role of deadlines before. Like, we don't, none of us really like deadlines particularly, but they do something fascinating, which is they oftentimes will take pieces of work that are too big and really just force you to do something different that gets at, you know, some portion of the value that you would have created otherwise. Because the project that we had scoped out, because we have scoped out what it would look like to actually put these in the game. And it is a undertaking and a half because of just how involved it is on the UI front. And then to say like, oh, I really think this is important to get in, and we have, you know, 10 days. So obviously it can't go in the game. So how could I do it? Yeah. And I guess the web's good enough. So let's just go there, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, well, why don't we just start there?
It also speaks to the attitude of just delivering delivering something, right? Like, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to solve all the problems. But if it does start to address the problems that we see, then it's still worth doing.
Right. Yeah. So, and then you can test it out and see how people respond to it and what kind of use cases it gets, right? Because the only use case that we've talked about a few, but they're mostly around exactly this kind of thing where people want to either people kind of behave as curators and they're just like finding really cool content and they're sharing them with the people. And or people who are doing speedrunning competitions was kind of the two obvious use cases that we saw. And people that are doing speedrunning competitions and stuff, like they put in a lot of external work to make these things happen. And so providing even an MVP like this to kind of like give that a boost, even though it's still not super user friendly and it's not in the game and all that kind of stuff, is going to allow us to see what that community will end up doing with something like this. Right. So that can tell us what the next step is going to be. And if it's something that we need to make better or not, or if this way we can get away with what it is.
I do want to say it's funny though, because you know there's a lot of this dream before you ever launch a game that like about the feeling of launching it, where when you sit down and watch people play, like what do you imagine that's going to feel like, right? Where it's like, well, it's just like a mystical thing. And the reality is that especially if you designed the damn thing or programmed it or did any art on it, then mainly you're going to be watching it and being like, all right, I have a list of 70 issues we need to talk about now on Monday, right? Because like it's hard to it's very hard not to see all the places where you could remove some friction or potentially get some ideas for these various things. And
yeah, it's hard to take your designer hat off.
Honestly, yeah. Yeah, it's very difficult to do.
I think that's your job. So it's fine.
Well, I think it's one of those things you gotta remind yourself to do around the launch window at least for a couple of days. It's like
just put the hat down. Put the hat down.
Just to watch. Only be on the lookout for actual disasters.
Oh yeah.
That's a terrible thing. And I've been trying to get into that mode because of the fact that we're basically on a content freeze. One of the things that I tend to do is I just kind of like go off and I'm like, hey, I prototyped this new game feature. Check it out. And then Sam's like, fuck. And then he's got to go make some art for it. And it's a very chaotic thing. And I've been not doing that for the past couple of weeks because the game is what it is for launch right now. And any new stuff that I add to the game will force people's attention away from the stuff that they're trying to do to get the game ready for launch and onto this new thing that I just like threw onto their laps. Right. So I haven't been doing that. So I personally feel like I'm in a much better spot in terms of being able to watch the videos of the gameplay and stuff and just being like, nice. I just get to appreciate it.
We got a little distance from it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's honestly how I feel about watching Crashlands videos as well, because like I haven't touched that code for years now. Mm-hmm. And so if I see somebody playing it, I could just kind of like get a chuckle out of it and enjoy it. But man, when you're doing active development on a game and you see people play it, it's very hard. all right, let's get on to questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. First question comes from Butterscotch Atheist. In the DevOps GDC talk, you talk about all the systems you upgraded and optimized by identifying bottlenecks and streamlinable tasks. What was it like in the moment? I'm working on similar personal improvement and it's hard to pare down the work I do to the processes and systems that I use.
Hmm. What was it like in the moment, as in the recrafting of these things?
By identifying where those problems are, and then actually making those changes. Mm. So I think this is something that there wasn't like a moment, if that makes sense. It was more of once we went through all the DevOps stuff, you know, we did do our waste analysis where we just went through all the different types of waste and we just tried to list out everything that we could think of where we might be producing those kinds of waste. So when do you find yourself waiting for things? When do you find yourself having to return to unfinished projects? When do you get hit by defects and bugs from upstream from somebody else? And then just talking through the consequences of those things and also the sources of those things. So we did at first to do sort of like one really big waste analysis.
That was a lot.
And that thing itself was sort of the catalyst for all kinds of other of other changes. But what one important note is in the talk, you know, I said that the only way to do this is to stop production.
Yeah.
Right. Because you can't continuously apply pressure on like moving things through your development pipeline while also working on the pipeline itself. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the big takeaway is like you got to stop doing stuff and you have to actually go through and be very deliberate about just talking through all the processes that you use. Use flowcharts. Like Google Drive has a great flowchart like diagram builder that's really easy to use. I think it's just called draw.io. And just map out where things are happening. You can put time estimates on them and stuff like that. But once you get past that, then it just kind of changes into a cultural shift of just constantly being aware of what is happening to you as you're doing different things in the development process. And being able to use those terms in that language of knowing when you're being, you know, hit by a defect or when you're pulling heroics and why that happened and just being ready to hit those moments where you like step back and you just go, okay, hold on. This is not working. We need to stop, fix this stuff, and then move on.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you guys have any further thoughts?
Well, I think for me personally, I always find it very exciting. I love working on production stuff and on design stuff because to me they kind of feel the same. And so a lot of it is it's enjoyable because I feel like you at least get a sense during the process. And of course, it's usually at least mildly untrue, if not completely untrue, that you have a better mental model of how the fuck things are working, right? So you're like, oh, we just need to do this here and that'll stop these things from happening. And then you get like for me that's very exciting, right? So that talk through that discovery, and then that for me always provides all the sort of all the vigor needed. I feel like to really tackle and update whatever the processes are without you know being too moody about it. I think the thing that's always funny is the fact that usually as soon as we talked about it before, but like as soon as you move the problem, it's just like players. So if we update, so Adam for example added this playlist tool, MVP version of it, right? Anytime we do anything like this, then we actually just move the source of any feedback, potential feedback, downstream, right? So it's no longer going to be the fact that you can't make these playlists at all. It'll be now actually probably – it'll probably cause higher pressure on the dev team in the future to get these playlists –
to improve built. This tool.
Yeah, and to improve it and then potentially even put them in the game, right? Because it provides an attention point for these things. And so that's one of the things I find most fascinating about the process is sometimes – you know, you'll start, say, 3-4 months ago because you're like, oh, I just needed to fix this little thing. And then if you actually trace back what happened because of it, sometimes it can be like absolutely bonkers stuff in terms of like the scale that it sort of blew up into. It's the whole like trading up a paperclip for a house sort of a situation where it's like
you just that keep really on, is what it's like.
Yeah. You just keep on trading up these problems and then you're suddenly like, oh, God, I have a house.
Now I got to pay for this mortgage.
Yeah.
So all I had to do before was stick some documents together. Mm-hmm. Now I have a mortgage. So it's part of it is cultural. Part of it is just is that willingness to stop. And it's the recognition that that you're always going to have problems, and you want to try to make sure that you have the right problems. So like it's the fact that Adam is able to you know develop this this new system and test it and deploy it very quickly is all great because it's a testament of the work that he has done on the website to make it easy to do that kind of thing, right?
And low risk.
And it's great that we get to like take a small annoyance for a small number of players and develop a new feature that will turn into a medium annoyance for a huge number of players. because that's the kind of problem we want to have is to be able to deliver experiences to people, and experiences create feedback.
Yep.
So I mean, that's totally fine. All right. Next question comes from IC Bush, who says, "What services do you use to host all your stuff? Shared levels, games, Bscotch ID. How do you divide your time between developing and supporting development?" So Adam, you probably want to hit this
for that latter part of the question. I don't, I guess, in that
don't divide your time between.
Yeah, development and supporting development to me are the same thing, which kind of goes to the prior question that we talked through. So unless that meant something different than I think it does, which is also possible. But yeah, my time goes, if I see a hole that's going to lead to problems in the future, then I just go fix that thing, you know?
It's if you see something, do something.
If you see something, do something. Say. Yep. as the saying goes.
And then, what kinds of services are we using for some of these things, and how have they been?
So yeah, without getting into the weeds, we're generally on Amazon Web Services. So you got your big competitors. You got your AWS, Amazon Web Services. You got your Microsoft Azure. You've got your Google Cloud. I think actually that one's.
I think it's just called the Goog.
I think it's just Google Cloud, which is a little more straightforward than the other two. But so you got your big three, and then every other thing in the universe is hosted on one of those. And in fact, most of them give you options. So it's like, which one of these do you want to be hosted on? So maybe actually what the better move here is for me to describe my policy, which is there are some things that I want full control over, which is my code for the server that does all of our business logic. Business logic not meaning like company, but meaning the things that make stuff happen that we need to have happen.
And it negotiates deals for us.
Right. If only. Oh, I wish.
But the idea being that we have very weird, very specific needs for the logic that's happening server side for like managing players, managing data, all that kind of stuff. So I want full control over that code. For everything else, I don't want to have to think about it if at all possible.
Yep.
So to that end, I basically find services that typically sit on top of cloud providers, but that abstract things even further away, and that there are people involved who I can just, you know, send a support request to and say, hey, I don't know how to do this. Please walk me through it, or how much do I have to pay you to walk me through this, or whatever, right? So that when it comes to like database hosting, I use Mongo Atlas, which is sort of the main place, I guess, that hosts MongoDB databases. And I just have people over there. And I just, anytime I have a problem, I just talk to them directly and, you know, we go from there. So I think that to me, that approach is the good one to. So when we were first starting, which is now getting to B-Sketch ID, I tried to do literally everything. And a lot of it was because we didn't have any money. We were time rich and money poor, right? And
so, we use a service called like Nearly Free Speech or something like
that. Yeah, and we still do. So B-Sketch ID, yeah. I have almost not touched in years. Every once in a while something weird happens and I have to go fix a little thing. But it is very scary code. Don't want to deal with it, but it just lives there, right? So it's like – it's shared hosting and the whole thing, and that was because I didn't know what I didn't know. I thought I needed to control everything, and I didn't really understand what I was exchanging when I said I'd rather spend my time than money.
Yeah,
right. So today I do exactly the opposite. And if I could pay a fairly reasonable price, at the time,
we didn't have the option because
we still had some money, right? Yeah,
we had a couple $100s.
Yeah, there were still some trade-offs that we could have made, definitely.
Yeah, we didn't have to be so aggressive about it.
Yeah, yeah, and so I think that's kind of my general strategy, and then otherwise I go to providers who are really well established, and in general, ideally are cores, like in the case of like Mongo Atlas. So MongoDB, the database stuff that we use, is an open source project, but it's managed by a company, like primarily, which is the same company that is our host for our databases. So I like to use entities that have that really tight relationship with the product, because then I can believe that they know what they're talking about, you know? And because that typically gives you sort of more cutting edge access to the most recent versions and to the best customer support and all that kind of stuff. So that's basically been my policy. And I think
that
the details,
seems like a good one.
Yeah, the details are, you know, maybe not, they're just not that interesting to most people, unfortunately. I mean, they're interesting to me, and I guess the question asker, you know, but so I can't, but I feel like I probably should not just go dive into it.
I think it does make for great radio.
Yeah. On a broader level, it speaks to the general point, which is that it's something I think a lot of people get confused when they first start, and you see this a lot with game programmers who end up making engines instead of games, which is you really have to ask yourself the question, what is the unique thing that you are doing that no one else needs to be doing in this particular context or can do in this particular context. And so usually that ends up being actually the very specific stuff, right? No one's going to make exactly the game you're trying to make. So that needs mm-hmm. to be what your energy goes into, not, you know, making a physics system from scratch, unless that is required. But usually that is not required.
Usually it is not.
And the same thing with web systems and everything else. Yeah, as much as possible, because otherwise you end up spending just so much time just not building the unique thing, which is really
yeah. boring. Yeah. And there's off-the-shelf products today for web stuff for just everything.
Yeah.
So if you're like, oh, I need to have my users log in, I need to send them emails, there's services for that. They're not cheap generally, but when you're just starting out, it doesn't matter because the not cheapness is a scale problem, right? Which is a good problem to have because if you have scale, then it's okay if things are less cheap typically, mm-hmm. right?
Because you also have income.
Yeah, because you have income. You have people paying you to do those things right. as long as you protect your stuff. And so I will say that the one thing that I do am always very worried about with all of our stuff is keeping pirates out of our web systems because web systems are cheap on a per user basis unless 99% of your users are not paying for them, for your web resources.
Because now you're devoting 100 times the resources to your player base as you have actually people paying to use those services.
And it does, and it scales linearly. So if we have to have 100 times as many resources, it just does cost us 100 times as much, right? Which begins to add up very fast.
Yeah. We don't like that.
Nope.
So don't. All right, next question comes from underscrum rompy yearbly, who says,
that's a hard one.
Have any of you created a burner account for the podcast questions so you could ask a question that you really wanted to answer and talk about?
Ooh.
Come on, give us the juicy, truthful details.
I mean, the very truthful answer to this is no, because we just talk about whatever we want to anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I thought, the hilarious framing of this is like, there's only certain things we get to talk about.
Gotta sneak it in.
And, you know, as Sam's story about Diana sticking her leg in a pillow, like, we got to stay on topic, you know, during the pre-question phase.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We got to keep this thing on the rails.
Yep.
So, of course, we have to make fake accounts so that we can talk about the stuff we really care
That's
about.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And the real tricky, like, weird part about this is the first time we've ever done that.
That's true. Yeah, they called us out just immediately, you know?
No, I mean, this question is one of my burner accounts that I made.
Mm.
So – yeah. So that's
that real?
No, that's not true.
That would explain the very hard to pronounce rumpus name.
But I think one of my favorite things that we've done, speaking of dumb names, was that time we all played World of Warcraft for a weekend, the three of us, and mm-hmm. all had almost the same name where it was like,
oh, yeah.
I think Seth was Wobblob-Doo. I was Wob-Dob-Doo. And Adam was like Wobbadibble or something like that.
I was Wadoop-a-Doop.
Wadoop-a-Doop. And so we were just walking around. And for some reason, I just found it tickling. You know? I was like, this is great.
It got tickled.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's causing confusion. All right.
Next question comes from Chelosis. Sure, we've all heard of passive-aggressive post-it notes. But what about passive-aggressive Trello cards?
Mmm. I don't think we have a lot of passive aggression going on in the studio, to be honest.
But what about them, Sam?
Yeah, I didn't ask.
Just
if we
what
have
about them?
I think.
Are they good?
Bad.
Are they bad?
I'm gonna
how do you
bad.
Use them?
Yeah, I think they're bad. I would say. I mean, just like a passive. Usually, I feel like a passive aggressive post-it note is because you don't know who the fuck did it. That's usually what it is, and so you don't know. You can't inquire. You can't be like, "Where is my lunch? Why have you been particularly eating it? Like, if you were starving today, that's fine. Like, we could talk about this. But, like, you know, there's no – you have no ability to gather information.
Yeah.
So you have to put out this,
it also depends on
how, guilt, you know?
How your Trello system works, right? Because ours is a flow from left to right task management system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to think of a passive-aggressive task in the sense that – it would have to just be aggressive because it's a thing you're supposed to do.
That's true. It's actually a piece of work. That's
yeah,
true.
It cannot be passive.
Right. So right. somebody's been eating your yogurt.
So they put it in a Trello card
in the fridge.
Stop eating my yogurt.
And you in the inbox, you make a task called "Don't eat my yogurt," and then you assign it to Sam. And then he moves it to the doing pile. And now this week
I am not eating Adam Sandler.
For this week.
The problem is then you're going to archive that card, and then next week you're going to start eating my dang food again.
This is where automation comes in. Now we have to automate the reminder.
And that's why Trello has Butler. Mm-hmm. And so you can just every week it'll make a new card, assign it to Sam, and tell him to not eat the yogurt still again this week too.
Continue not doing it.
Have you had any passive-aggressive comments in the Trello cards? Because we do have a lot of discussions in the Trello cards sometimes where it's like
– I mean a passive-aggressive comment is as I understand, is usually when somebody is upset about something
but not
and wants to it. Not have a conversation or conflict about it. And so instead they'll make like a overarching – statement that just kind of hits everyone softly equally. You know?
So
it can still be targeted passive aggression, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I just don't use it enough or have it used on me enough.
It'd be like, oh yeah, well, you know, some people in this company think that this is supposed to be like this, but that's not how it is. Right.
Mm.
And like, you know, that the person who you just said that to is the only person who does that thing or whatever.
I think we're pretty direct. But I think it's also because we have a very psychologically safe feeling team. And so there's not really a lot of need to like be weird about it. You know what I mean? You can just be like, hey, yeah. Adam, why did you eat my yogurt? Instead of being
and
like
Adam would be like, it's delicious, and you'd be like, I mean that's
and so plus yes. Yogurt is our really our one point of contention, and I have to maintain some level of contention in the
that's
company.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Where are we gonna drive that passion from, if not from conflict?
It's gotta come from anger.
Mm-hmm. Adam's the CTO, the chief thievery the chief of yogurt theft. Officer.
Chief theft officer. That is correct.
Yeah, so
I like how bad we are at this question. This is good. I'm feeling good about this.
That we can't figure out what it means to be passive aggressive.
Yeah, I'm even just trying to think of an example from my life.
Hey,
I can't.
Hey, people, just fucking say what you need to say to the people you need to say it to.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that a song? I feel like that's a song.
Say what that's you need to say.
I think it's by the Beatles.
No, it's that one.
What's the thing? How you need to say it to. All right. Next question comes from Bam182. I recently bought a house.
Nice.
Congratulations.
Nice. That's impressive.
And very I didn't good. Realize that the that the down payment and monthly mortgage payments were far from the end of it.
Yeah.
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 Which part was he surprised by?
Which home projects caught you the most off guard? Which home projects have you reaped the most benefits from? What do you regret doing?
Well, it's just a stack of things. You don't realize. Like, because you got to buy the house. So there's like, all the money's gone already. And then you have a mortgage, down payment. So all your money's gone. And then mortgage.
Property taxes.
Yeah, all your money's gone in the future. And then property taxes, which people forget about. But they're a lot of money every year.
Homeowner's insurance.
Insurance. And then sometimes if you're in like a subdivision or like got a condo or some shit, homeowner's
HOA fees. Yep.
HOA is my least favorite part of the whole puzzle.
I mean, yeah, for sure. But so I think
everything else sucks, but an HOA just really makes
me angry. And so that's just to actually have the house. That's actually the cost of the house.
And then you realize, fuck, I've been living in an apartment. Now I have space and it's all completely empty.
Took my wife and I like
– It is completely empty.
I think 6 months to get a couch. Yeah. We didn't have a dining room table for almost a year.
So your first year, maybe two, maybe more, kind of depending on your budget and your willingness to go furniture shopping, which isn't
– It's a sport.
That awesome.
Yeah.
Is just in filling that space because it would be weird to buy a house and then just have it be an empty cave.
Which for me, that's probably part of the problem for me is because I actually prefer to have as little stuff as possible. And so to me, the whole idea of like buying an enormous space and then just filling it with stuff, like it rubs me so hard. It makes me just scream on the inside.
You don't want to fill it. You don't want to fill it just for the sake of it, which is actually
– No, but the thing is you do. That's what you do with a house. With a house, you're like, oh, this wall is blank. Let me put some art on there. You're like, oh, there's nothing in this corner. Let me put a lamp over there, right? And you literally
– You could put a chair over there. Yeah.
Yeah, you literally just populate the space because if you don't, then it's not – it doesn't have the cozy, you know, home feel, which is true. Like I get that. Like having the stuff in there is nice, but it just seemed to me like the whole idea of like I bought this big vacuum. And I'm going to just
fill it up.
I'm going to fill it because I'm a person.
Yeah. It's just, I find It is what we do, but I find it.
It is. Wild. It's crazy, and it's also very. It's just how it goes.
Yeah, I would say the project that we did that was most surprising was the pulp resurfacing of the back patio or back deck, painting it, whatever, with sealant. So
you guys messed that up pretty.
Talk about this, like, probably a year.
How hard could this be?
Yeah, Diana remembered from her childhood doing it, so we were like, easy. If Diana is a baby, we're adults. And so we get our stuff, go out there, and 4 hours later are like sunburnt and about to get divorced, and we were like, what happened? And Diana called her mom, and her mom's like, oh yeah, you just like rolled it like a minute, and then, you know, went back in the house and played with your toys. Like, me and your dad did it over 3 weekends.
Right. So her memory was that as a 4-year-old or something, she resurfaced an entire patio.
Exactly.
Which is, of course, crazy.
Yeah. So then, you know, having someone come fix that was a thing. We put a flagpole in the front, like on our, you know, in front of the house. Or there was one there, but it was like really weirdly attached to the brick. And so a wind came and like ripped the thing out of the brick. So we replaced it. And then that one also got ripped out. And then I glued it back in, and then that also got ripped out. So now there's just like a hanging flap of a flag thing there. I don't know. There's a lot of things that have happened that I'm just like, I don't want to.
Yeah, you can never solve problems in a house. You can only sort of relocate them or postpone them.
It's just like every other aspect of life, you know?
It reminds me of what our dad says, because he's a surgeon. He works in a hospital. He does a lot of child deliveries, births. And he says that one of the things he always wants to say to parents when he delivers the baby, you know, and hands it, is congratulations. Now you have to worry about this for the rest of your life.
That's like what
happens. That's what buying a house is, right? Yeah. Because when you own a thing, that's yours now, and you are responsible for it. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we were just looking out at the lawn, and it's been a bit chilly. You know, like, it's been a bit cool, and also it's been kind of rainy because it's spring, and that means that there are like certain moments where it will be fine to mow the grass, but a lot of other times it'll just be really uncomfortable, be wet, you know, not feasible. So there's like a timing problem, and you know, I was looking out there and I was like, I mean, we could just not, right? Like.
Especially right now, I feel like no one would blame you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but also just like in terms of
you mean like societally, keeping an ornamental grass in your front yard is maybe less of a thing than,
like,
it used to be.
Like, of course, it's as with like breaking any rules. Like, you can just go ahead and do whatever you want. Like, you can.
I mean, not always, because usually there's like, you know, city rules and stuff that prevent you from doing. Yeah, you
right.
Want.
But then there's that question of. I don't know if you guys had this, but every now and then there's kind of like an inkling of sort of like a desire for chaos.
Oh, yeah.
And just be like, just out of curiosity, what would happen if I just let it grow for like a month? And people would, of course, I assume I would get some kind of a letter in the mail.
You get a passive aggressive post-it note is what you get.
From somebody from the homeowners association or something. And they'd be like, hey. Like, you got to maintain your lawn at a level of blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I could respond and be like, oh, yes, totally understood. I will take care of it. And then I just still wouldn't. And then it just kind of seemed.
I think you're describing those people that everybody hates.
I'm just, you know, well, here's the thing.
Like in a neighborhood, there are these people who do exactly this. Like, this isn't a novel concept you're inventing. This is the house that you walk by and you're like, oh, this is why my property values are decreasing. You know, or it's like, this is where this grass is so tall. This is where the badgers live and attack you when you walk by. You know,
yeah. So you want to walk your dog on the other side. So of course I don't do those things.
Right.
But you know, there's always that.
You're always curious. You know, I feel like as a human, you're always kind of peering over the void.
Well, because every now and then, as a person, you're just like, I'm sick of this.
Yep. You know?
Yeah. I think for me, when it comes to like having a house. The thing about it that is really a problem, that's the biggest blurs where all the benefits are easily outweighed by the costs, is a yard. That is like, that is the thing. And so my wife and I are into the more wild kind of look, you know, which doesn't mean let your grass grow forever. It means get rid of all your grass so you can have other stuff grow there forever that people don't freak out about, you know, because lawns are pointless anyway. And so if you just get rid of it, put other stuff there, then, you know, then you're fine. And so So we managed to make ours very low maintenance, but it's still one of those things where I look outside and like I just see stuff growing up, you know, in between the brick walkway, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go. Yeah, it's work that's just constantly creating itself because the work is literally alive and growing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lawns are absolutely pointless. That's apparently sense. In the early, like before the 50s, the 1950s, people who had like houses, like as people started moving to the suburbs and whatever, people who had lawns did not do anything to them. Mm. It was just assumed that like it's grass and weeds and plants and flowers and shit. Like, who cares? but it became a sign of class,
like to be able to spend money or time.
It's like wearing a suit lawn that you have to dry clean. Yep, you know, right. It's like this thing that I'm wearing sucks. Like, it is expensive. It costs a lot, and it always will continue to cost a lot. And that's how I show everyone that I'm doing quite well for myself. Right? Yep. And so that's what lawns became, you know, over time. And so unfortunately now we're just kind of stuck there, because it'd be great if you could just let it, you know, just let it be a prairie. Well, I think let it be an ecosystem. Yeah,
the general point is like it's kind of like with the start of the question. It's like it seems like you're getting into a certain level of complexity that you signed up for, and that the reality oftentimes is considerably deeper than that as far as like a house is concerned.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And I will say that, I mean, it's been, as much as I've had to complain about various things breaking in the house or the shower leaking or whatever else, it has been nice after living in that one bedroom apartment for like 2 years, 3 years, whatever.
Yeah, you haven't had carbon monoxide poisoning in quite a while.
Yeah, I've been almost murdered by my landlord a couple times for his negligence. So there's that, you know. At least I'm going to kill. You only get murdered by yourself. Your own. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, your own. And there's something empowering about that, you know.
If this building collapses on me, it's my building that collapsed.
I will say,
on
the whole, I absolutely to like 1,000,000% prefer having a house to being an apartment or a condo or any of those kinds of things. And after doing that kind of stuff for most of my adult life, when we were like, my rule just became, I will no longer share a wall with other human beings again. That is just my rule. And I will no longer have an HOA again, because I've dealt with all of those things enough. Yeah. I hated every second of it. And every single annoyance I've ever had owning a house has so far outweighed how much I hate those other two things that it's fine.
You had a problem, as I recall, you had a problem when you were in a condo where the roof was – you were on the top floor.
Yeah.
The roof was leaking into your condo. Oh, yeah.
But the roof was not my property.
The roof is not yours, but the ceiling inside is yours.
Yeah. And so they were not liable for the damage that their leak caused to my ceiling, nor could I fix the leak because it wasn't my property. It's not your leak.
So it's leaking into your property, but it's not your leak. Mm-hmm. And so you're not allowed to do anything about it, and they refuse to do anything about it. And now you're on the hook to just continuously repair your own ceiling.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun with an HOA. So, yeah.
I will say
– and mine wasn't even like – and I heard there's mine compared stories, to the horror stories is nothing. Like, mine was really completely fine actually. It was just still – even a completely fine HOA sucks. Mm-hmm. Just don't have one if you can avoid it. It's horrible.
Yeah, I've been in a – I was in a great situation where I was in a condo in Iowa City quite a while back, and the there was like a condo set up where there were houses that were duplexes, and then there was a building that had apartment style units inside, and they were both under the same HOA, and everybody paid the same dues, and every month it was just an endless battle because the people in the big building didn't want to pay for the lawn service and landscaping of the people with the houses. The people in the houses didn't want to pay for the elevator repair for the people in the big building. Everybody paid the same, and it was just a never ending stream of complaints about these things. And at the end of the day, the difference that it was for any given person was like a matter of individual single dollar amounts over the course of an entire year, as far as like
$6 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing about an HOA is things that don't matter suddenly matter, and things that do matter somehow don't. It's just.
Was it the bike rack?
Yeah, it's the bike rack or the bike shed problem.
Have we talked about the bike rack problem?
Yeah, I think we have. The problem where if you get a group of people together to solve a problem, usually, unless they all have deep expertise in it,
they just go fight forever about a boring ass side problem instead.
The focus gets onto whatever the small thing is that everybody can actually argue about and form an opinion about. As opposed to, so the joke was basically that a nuclear reactor was supposed to be going up in a town and everybody was arguing about where to put the bike shed.
$10 million structure.
Where's the bike rack go? And then, you know, having two meetings about where the fuck the bike rack goes when you're talking about putting a nuclear power plant in your hometown. It's like, this is literally not important.
Yeah, no meetings about waste disposal, about engineering, just about the placement of the bike.
Yeah, I think I would say, to answer the other part of the question, though, I think my favorite, at least if I recall the question even, the things that I've enjoyed the most in terms of projects for the house are, one, when we moved in, all of our bathroom fixtures, like the sinks and the toilets and stuff, were old and very stupid. So like in our third on one of our bathrooms, we have tiny bathrooms. We have two tiny bathrooms and then one like normal sized bathroom. And so both the tiny bathrooms like are hard to get into because the door is like right next to the toilet and like the whole thing. But in one of them, they also had decided to have this fucking enormous sink that was like 2 feet deep. Like literally, it was just so deep. So that
like a bucket.
Yeah, it was like a it was huge. It was just enormous. And so, so you open the door to this tiny bathroom. And the sink is just coming in, like it's like going into the doorway by about like 3/4 of a foot because of just where everything is placed. So you have to kind of like skirt around this enormous sink as you go in there, which was just so ludicrous. And then the one that was in their other tiny bathroom was in this like little tiny baby sink that like you couldn't even like wash your hands in because it was so little.
Well, I mean, they used all the sink parts to make the other sink. It was just they ran out of sink pieces.
And then one of the toilets just smelled weird. And it wasn't dirty. It just smelled. So I presume there was like stuff growing somewhere inside of it. I don't know. It just smelled weird. And so basically that was my top priority when we moved in. I was like, I can't handle any of this. That was where our first round of like dumping our money to the house went, was we ripped out all of our bathroom fixtures and had them replaced. And so I did all this research on toilets, you know, and on like got these things like faucets that I liked.
You learn a lot about weird shit that.
Oh man, my toilets are awesome, I will say. They are fucking great. I love those things.
Yeah, that's for me the thing I just didn't really probably appreciate or think much about in advance is like if you buy a house, I think my house was made in the 70s or something. And so it's now a almost 50-year-old building. There have been a lot of people and families that have come and gone through this house, and they all had different ideas about what this house was supposed to be.
Yeah, if you ever end up looking inside of a wall of it, like our house was built in 1896.
Yeah.
And every time something has to happen inside of a wall, it is a fucking nightmare because
they're like, well, there's been 43 generations of people fucking with these walls.
Oh, it was wild back there.
Yeah. And so there's stuff in this house where like I know that it's there, but I don't want to do anything with it.
Yeah, just stay away from
it. You know? But like when I moved in, they were like, now here's the irrigation system and here's the lawn irrigation control panel console. And I'm like, the fuck? So you've got like a set of pipes and everything to just like water this grass? Why? And
yeah, so why is that?
So I looked at it and like it's this elaborate control panel. There's no – they lost the manual. So there's no way for me to know how to
– And the thing was probably built in the 70s. So you know, pre-internet, there is no manual.
And also because of that, then like once – there's rules and laws and regulations about lawn irrigation systems and like they're a prime source of water flowing backwards through the city's system, right? And so – once per year, we have to have somebody come and inspect this thing to make sure that our backflow prevention device is functioning or whatever. And of course, like removing a lawn irrigation system, I assume is quite the undertaking.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of an annoying thing. That's just kind of I'm not going to burn through thousands of gallons of water just to slightly green up some grass, you know. So I don't know. It's
also adding outlets is great. That was
Adding outlets.
We did that to our garage, and then also to a couple places in our house, and added some more light fixtures in our bathroom and stuff. Because like, because electrician just comes in, punches a hole in the wall, and then just like runs some wires out. And then all of a sudden, another place to like, we have so many outlets. Like the prior owners also added outlets. Apparently, there are outlets like every. And it's an old house. This is pretty weird, right? But like literally,
your house is pre-electricity.
Yeah, it is. But still, every wall has an outlet on it. Like every single one, at least one outlet. Many walls have two or three outlets. Like it is covered in outlets.
You can plug anything in.
Oh my
anywhere.
God, it's amazing. Like when I'm vacuuming and stuff, I could just like, I know that I ran out of cable. Who gives a shit? I'll just plug it in right like, wherever I'm standing. There's a plug right there. Yeah. So that was another good home project. It was just making it so you can plug stuff in.
So yeah, buying a house is, you don't just buy the house. Nah. That's just the start of a whole journey.
You buy a lot of chores.
Yeah.
But it's not that those chores don't exist if you are renting a house. It's just that it's somebody else's job to do them, right? But just like with any job, how well they're going to do it is going to be variable. So while you technically don't have to do those jobs anymore, the other person may not also do those jobs.
Right.
So, and then you
now
can't.
It's nobody's job.
Yeah, now it's nobody's job. Or you may end up just doing it yourself anyway because nobody else will do it. And now you're basically living in a house that you don't own. Mm-hmm. If you can't tell, I hate renting. I just hate it. I just hate it. And I haven't even had terrible experiences. I've just had medium
experiences. You just hate the concept. Just the idea.
I hate the concept and all my medium experiences.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producers, Adam hates renting.
I hate renting.
We'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jed Koster, for putting the podcast together. And thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net, where we have links to everything.
Including to Levelhead, that you should just go pre-purchase. I mean, sure, it's coming out in like a week, but you should go pre-purchase it anyway.
Yeah, because once it comes out, you can't pre-purchase it anymore. No, so
it's a one-time deal.
Better get it while it's
and get that
hot.
Get that pre-download done too, because you know it'll take all of 20 to 30 seconds to download.
So, this bad boy is about 200 megabytes.
Yeah,
it's gonna take you
all. You don't want to wait for minute. That.
It's gonna take you all minute to download. All right, thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.